Welcome back to Copper Country Today. I'm your host, Rick Allen. Joining me in the studio right now is Houghton City Manager Eric Wara. Eric, welcome back to the program.
Thanks, Rick.
It's been a little while since we had a chance to sit down and talk. And as I mentioned in the news recently here, the main topic at your last city council meeting was snow. It was on everybody's mind, and it's the topic that always comes up in any conversation that people have now. It's like, how are you handling the snow? And different responses from, you know, those that are doing okay and those that are just getting by. As a city, how have the city been handling it this winter?
Well, it's certainly been a lot tougher this winter. I mean, last year we really didn't get any measurable or plowable snow until late in January, and here it started in December and hasn't stopped. We got a great crew. You know, they're experts at it. They've been keeping up, but it comes to a certain point. It's nice. We're doing this interview and the sun's out right now, so they got a little break and some time to breathe, pick things up. But it is tough for everybody. You had the students, you know, the tech students that left for 3 weeks for Christmas break, and it never stopped snowing while they were gone. A lot of them, unfortunately, were in for a heck of a surprise when they got home. You had to tell them, if I was gone for 3 weeks, my driveway would be full of snow too. But the guys, you know, they've been working quite a bit of overtime, keeping things picked up. Most of the residents have been very understanding. Of course, you got some folks that have unique situations out there, and we've been trying to be accommodating the best we can. But ultimately, people have to be able to get down their streets and get to shopping and things like that. And the guys have kept up really well.
Budget wise, does this put a strain on the budget, because you allocate so much money for snow removal? And I have to imagine that you would be ahead of that right now.
We should be, given we didn't have any right at the beginning of the year, where you normally end up spending dollars in October and November, where we really didn't have that. The thing with snow, it's always a moving target for us. Some winters it's a really easy winter. Other winters, we may go over budget in snow removal. And that's where you've really got to try to keep things on an average basis and have some contingency in place in case the snow goes long into April. But it's always, you hate to call it a dart throw, but there's no exact science to figuring out how much to budget for snow.
The Houghton DPW, and of course, takes care of the regular streets in Houghton, but I was wondering, what about the trunk lines because of US 41 going through downtown Houghton? Does the city take care of that, or is that done by MDOT?
No, the city actually is contracted by MDOT as part of our major street system. We take care of US 41 and M26 within the city limits. So pretty much from east of campus out on 41 all the way up through Atlantic Mine, actually. We take care of 41 and 26 and then also the bridge. So we do work with them where we have to work within certain parameters provided by DOT, which we certainly keep the roads plowed, keep them sanded and salted to the best of, the best we can, given the weather, because it's certainly, if the weather's too cold, you can't use salt. If it's too warm, you certainly don't want to pour sand on it. So there's a little bit of a science there that DPW uses. But an area like downtown now, being that's DOT trunk line, we are a little bit limited on, we have to plow the snow, we plow our sidewalks, and then of course we have our famous windrow, like most towns do around here where the highway goes through. We pick that up when we are allowed to. Every day it's not as clean as we want it to be some days, but I think our guys have done a great job, and we've modified the way we do things a little bit so it's not as bad as it was years ago.
Well, what we're seeing, of course, this year is that it's a relentless snow. It's every day. It seems like every day and every night, and you only have so many guys out there with so many trucks, and eventually they have to sleep.
Yep.
And so I've heard from people saying, well, my roads have never been this bad this year. And when I've heard that, I've reminded them and say, well, when you wake up in the morning, if your road wasn't plowed at night, was that work? Were the workers out all day the day before, plowing the road? And they're going to be right back at it again at some point. There's going to be, you can't be everywhere at all times.
Right. I mean, we've got 35 miles of road to plow in the city of Houghton, including the trunk lines. And the difficult part is we've gotten some snows this year where a street may have, if the guys came on at 11 o'clock at night, they plowed, you know, a street at 11 o'clock, and they've got to plow the rest of their route. And by 7 o'clock the next morning, when people are up and rolling around, you could have gotten a foot of snow in between. And they look out their window and go, why wasn't I plowed? Well, we plowed the last foot off of it, you know, 8 hours ago, and we got a foot since. And that's happened several times here where they finished everything up and we've just gotten pounded between 3 a.m. and 6 a.m. some mornings. And you look out your window and you can see, in a lot of cases you can see, there's two snowbanks out there because there's the snow and then there's the bank they plowed, you know, 10 hours before. And we've got our crew, they've got to go home and sleep. It's not safe to have them out there, you know, for, you know, people, oh, they're working 24 hours. No, that's not safe. That's not good for anybody. But they've got a system and a rhythm down where right now they're pretty much working exclusively at night because that's when the traffic is down. That's when it's safer to take care of the snow. They get in at, 7 o'clock in the morning and they probably go home and tell them, we don't want to hear from you till 2-3 in the afternoon anyway. And they go home and get their sleep, and then they're back at it the next day.
Many residents are already getting to the point where they're running out of places to put the snow. This is something that I've experienced in April or late March sometimes if we've had a lot of snow during that, you know, during that time, but never in beginning of January, that in the, this is my sixth winter that I've been up here. For those residents that are, you know, running out of place to put snow, what options do they have?
The best option, you know, of course, the best option is to, you hate to say it, but get a hold of a local contractor that's got a piece of heavy equipment that can stack it for you. You know, a lot of people that have lived here a long time understand that, yeah, I'm going to keep this big as long, you know, keep it wide open as long as I can, because you could run into the situation most of us do at the end of the season. It gets tough to stage snow in your yard. So, you know, it's just unfortunate, but most people, you know, a lot of people, especially in Houghton, have not lived here. You know, they weren't here in 78, 79 when we got pounded that year. And, you know, for the last month and a half, we've been tracking like that. But it's a lot of the local contractors, and most of them are very reasonably priced to move a lot of snow, which will give you hopefully the rest of the season's worth of room.
I do hear about 78, 79 quite a bit from, you know, being somebody who moved here a few years ago and always would be told, you know, oh, this winter is nothing. You should have been here back in 78, 79. And I ask, all right, is this a bad winter?
Well, I was a little kid then. And I remember I was in grade school when that came around. And I remember it was a lot of snow. But, of course, I wasn't, you know, I was out shoveling for a chore thing. I wasn't trying to get out to go to work in the morning type of thing. But this winter has been tougher than the last several.
We will definitely remember it. Now, looking ahead to the rest of this year, one of the things you have lined up for the city is it's time to start to readdress the master plan.
Yeah, our master plan actually was finished in 2013, the last revision of that, and it's a five-year rotation, so 2018 is coming. We're less than a year away now. So in 2017, we're going to start working on the updates to the master plan. The previous one hadn't been updated in several years, so this 2013 update is a fairly modern, current plan. So we're going to, you know, after being able to check some things off that are in that master plan, we're going to kind of go through the same process we went through last time, you know, involving the community, updating our survey data from the last one, and hopefully have a master plan for 2019 to 2024. That's going to be the goal probably in the next year and a half.
How effective or useful has it been over the last, you know, 3 or 4 years of having a master plan?
Well, I mean, that master plan, that's any city, village, township, that's your roadmap. That's where you've documented where you want to go, where you want to be in 5 years. It's, you know, it's your plans for the future. So, you know, part of the city's, my job, the city, you know, all the folks that work at the city is looking at that master plan and figuring out how to fit those goals into, you know, different funding opportunities, you know, different times of the year, things like that. So it's, everybody should have one. Not everybody does, but it's something very important for a community to be able to go through, to grow, and grow in a way that is, let's say, acceptable to everybody in the community. You've involved everybody in the process to the extent that people will be involved, and it's a public, you know, document where everybody's hopefully had input. You've done surveys, you've held design meetings with folks, and then as using that as your blueprint, as you grow, you know that growth is in the best interest of the community.
When the last master plan was put together, it was under your predecessor, Scott McInnes. He was city manager at the time. Did you have much involvement in that process?
Myself, I actually went to the meetings at the time. I lived down here, and I went to the to a couple of the design meetings, and you know, made my opinions known at the time. And at that time, that was Scott with a lot of the local groups in the planning commission that worked on that at the time.
Okay, you got a view of the process there, and you'd be well equipped for it.
From one side, yeah. All right. From one side. Planning, my previous employment, you know, involved a lot of long-range planning for communities.
One of the items that was on your master plan that I believe actually, has helped bring it closer to actually happening is the Houghton Skate Park. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to ask you, because, you know, I know that they were hoping to be able to start working on this sometime later this year. And where that stands right now?
Well, right now they're in the process of the skate park committee group, however you want to look at it. They're in the process of finding a specialized consultant who can actually do the design of a skate park. It's not a job for the average engineer out there. It's a very special, unique type of construction, types of concrete, types of features. So they're working on that. They're closing in on their funding goals for that. They're looking at a couple of other funding sources that they'll be able to tap into as they get closer to construction. So with any good fortune, you know, the summer of 2017, we'll see some construction on that.
Well, the city was very kind in offering the use of the East Houghton Park that to be able to put this skate park in. And I know it wasn't the skate park group's maybe first choice. They would mm-hmm. like it to be over by Chutes and Ladders, but in fact, it will be down by the Super 8
yep.
Hotel,
yep.
The Super 8 Hotel there. And they get to use that. But I always kind of wondered, because the Houghton had a skate park mm-hmm. only a few years ago that was in the D Stadium, mm-hmm. the ballroom where now they're playing laser tag, which by the way is pretty awesome. Their laser tag is pretty good stuff. What is the thought process that this skate park being outdoors and all this money invested, handing over part of the park for its use, will be different than the park that was in the ballroom?
Well, being in the ballroom inside of a building, inside of a multi-use building at the time, it was supervision intensive. You know, being it was in the ballroom at D Stadium, this feature within East Houghton Park would be just like any other playground or picnic area within the city, where it's out in the open, it's for people to use when they want to use it, and it's going to be concrete. I mean, what they had built up in the D Stadium at the time was it was a really really ambitious bunch of young guys and gals that put together a homemade wooden skate park, essentially. And what we're trying to move toward is a professionally designed, sustainable, you know, something that's built from, you know, concrete and steel that's going to last there, and hopefully, you know, be able to add on to it eventually and have it as a more of a public park feature versus something that's inside of a building where technically someone has to lock the door at night, and it's just a little bit more difficult when it's a more homemade feature in a building versus another feature of a park as a dock or a playground would be.
Is the city going to be incurring an annual expense for, you know, perhaps even just liability insurance by having that park? Is, you know, I would say, think that an insurance would look at it as being more apt to injury than just a grass park.
Well, it's you know, that's something that the city's got everything from tennis courts to chutes and ladders to playgrounds all over the place, basketball courts, hockey rinks. It's just something that, you know, municipally, the last time I had a conversation about it anyway, it's just like having any other park in your system.
Okay. All right, so we'll definitely look for updates to that as the year goes on. I know that they were hoping to be able to start doing some building this year. Any hope that that's going to happen? I mean,
it's early January. There's a lot of I's to dot and T's to cross between now and then. And then there's also a component where the city is going to make some improvements to the overall flow of that park in order to create enough space for the skate park itself, create the parking, create the access, so people can get there. Parents can park, or people can get there and park. We can get a regular police patrol in there with any other park type of thing. We've got those features that we're going to do kind of on the periphery of where the actual feature would be to improve that park overall.
So that's over on the east side of the city, over on in the downtown area and a little off to the west of downtown. You're going to be having some work on the Lakeshore Drive. Go ahead and talk about this project, because I know there's a lot involved in it. I've covered a little bit on the news, but this is a good opportunity to kind of really delve into what you have planned there.
Yeah. Well, we were presented with an opportunity through the state of Michigan last spring. Was a really short burn grant application for infrastructure capacity enhancement. And they were looking for projects that were kind of ready to go. And so essentially we applied and we were awarded just over $877,000to make improvements to the infrastructure along Lakeshore Drive. And that's pretty much from D Stadium to the Ambassador, under the parking deck, that whole area. And so the thrust of the project is going to be connecting dead ends of water lines, replacing old sewer lines that, some of those, there's still some clay tile pipe down there in a few spots. So we will be replacing those, realigning the storm sewers, fixing the storm sewers, adjusting where the drainage goes. You know, we've got some drainage issues down there where we get puddles and different things like that. And then, as part of this as well, which actually helped us quite a bit on the grant application, Upper Peninsula Power Company, for several years, was looking for an economical way of getting a lot of their overhead underground down there. So they partnered up with us on the grant application, which really helped our grant application, rise to the top. And so UPCO is going to be doing some work getting a lot of the stuff that's hanging off the parking deck, getting that actually put underground into conduit, and hopefully getting rid of some pigeon habitat and a few things like that as well. But that infrastructure that UPCO's got up there, some of it's quite old, from the original construction of the deck. So they wanted to make some improvements down there as well. And them working the same time as us, creates a little synergy there where it's going to be cheaper for them to do the work, piggybacking on ours. So, everybody gets a benefit out of it.
What about some of the businesses that are down there under the parking deck there? Will it limit access to them? I guess it comes to mind right away is the comic book store, or the hockey store that's down there that could suffer. I mean, I know that some of the businesses that were in Hancock, had to suffer through a tough summer.
Well, we had great success in Houghton when we did the streetscape project in 2009, and that what to lessen that impact or actually negate that impact on those businesses takes a lot of planning. And, places like the comic book store or the hockey shop or that down there, really what we're going to be holding a meeting next week to, we've already sent surveys out when their delivery times are and things like that. And we really want to get people involved and so we can write some coordination clauses for the contract for this work. So, when they're fixing the sidewalk in front of someone's building, people still have access to it. But the city wants to take an active role in this as well to make this as painless, I don't know if that's the right word, but painless as possible, or least painful. I mean, you want to make an omelet, you got to break eggs. But approaching it with those businesses in mind too, because that's your downtown, that's your bread and butter, that we want to make sure that we consider their needs, as far as hours of operation, parking, things like that. So we're going to try to do our best to set this up where somebody's not going to have the front of their store dug up for 3 weeks. Maybe we stop on one end of their building or halfway, and then the next phase starts the other way. So you drove in from the left for 2 weeks, and now you drive in from the right, but you can drive in every time. So that's the goal.
Okay, because I don't want my access to my comics slowed down. I mean, I've got accounts. I have certain
you got polls?
Got polls, yeah. All right. So got to keep those up. I want to talk about some of the other items that maybe aren't as huge issues, but it's certainly worth talking about. One is, we've had a traffic light up at the Walmart on M26 there for a while, and I wanted to ask, you know, what's been the review so far?
Well, the reviews thus far, everybody knows what it was like before it. Now it's relatively new. The reviews are certainly positive. We've had some folks, you know, why don't you have a left turn lane as you do at Sharon Avenue? And, you know, those things have to meet certain warrants and traffic densities with DOT. I mean, you don't just willy-nilly start throwing stoplights up. That's why it took so long to get this one put up. We've had conversations with MDOT about the left turn arrow because a lot of people don't necessarily wait when they're supposed to wait on a red, but that's another story. They're looking at it. I mean, again, this is really made that a lot safer intersection as compared to before. They're refining the timing on the lights to lessen the impact to large truck traffic, different things like that, because there was a lot of concern that, you know, I'm driving a semi or a logging truck, I now have to stop an extra time on a hill, where they've worked that into the timing. So if you have to stop at one, you're, you know, going through the next two, you should be able to go through the next two without a red light. So it's a lot better than it was before, a lot safer than it was before.
I know I like it, especially during the holiday season here when there was a lot of traffic. I did learn to be cautious, you know, almost the hard way there the first time making that left-hand turn. This is probably where you get a lot of people saying they would like to see the arrow, is that the driver's coming down off the hill, either forget that there's now a light there or it's hard to stop, but sitting there and then waiting for the light to turn yellow and then, okay, everything's good, all right, there's a car coming, but the, you know, I can go, and that car sped up to make the light, rather than stopping, and I got out of the way quick, but then now I make sure that, you know, they're stopped before I turn.
Yeah, whether they're lights or their speed limit signs, there's always going to be bad behavior out there, and we just hopefully everybody drives nice.
In downtown, the last couple of summers, you tried to help with especially crosswalk traffic by using delineators, and we did a news story on those as well. And they looked pretty sharp there at first until they started getting hit and run over a few times. Are we going to see those come back?
Well, we're in discussions with DOT right now about those. I mean, we've had them out for two summers. They definitely enhance safety on one end, but then they also have some issues with them because laws differ from state to state, town to town. People don't realize that you're standing on an MDOT trunk line when you're on Sheldon Avenue versus people always commented to say Washington Street and Marquette. You know, how come they can do this there but you can't do it here? Well, Washington Street and Marquette is the city of Marquette Street. Sheldon Avenue, for better or for worse, is MDOT's. It belongs to the state of Michigan. So you have those, and the rules change as to who has control over what you can do. We certainly don't want people, and that's been one of the concerns the whole time, is assuming that they have unfettered access to just waltz out in front of traffic. It's worse yet where we have a one-way pair versus two-way traffic, which also changes the mix. But what they did do really well for downtown was they provided some traffic calming is the word. It slowed people down. Yeah, I had people complaining about having to slow down, and I said, you're welcome. That's just better for everybody because you couldn't go 35 down Sheldon Avenue anymore. And but we're working on some other solutions with MDOT. You know, we've been actually looking at why are there no brakes in the traffic in certain areas at certain times of the day? And that actually has to do with M26. That has to do with the bridge. And Chief Donnelly and I spent well over an hour last week, you know, drawing routes out with our fingers on paper and then discussing that with MDOT. And we're going to try to do some other things, but it's going to be tough this year. Because the construction work in Hancock is going to be continuing. There's still going to be lane closures on the bridge, you know, while that's going on. So this might not be the best summer to judge, you know, whether or not things work. But, you know, we're going to keep working on trying different things. I mean, these work to a certain extent, but there was some close calls out there, too, where someone from Wisconsin, where the law is different, just starts to cross the street assuming the traffic's going to stop. And in Michigan, it says, you know, you're not allowed to stop traffic by stepping out there. And there's actually two conflicting laws within the state. So it's not a simple fix, for better or for worse. You know, we have a state line, trunk line highway through our downtown. So we're going to keep working on solutions to that.
That's right. State trunk line highway that you got to plow.
So. That we have to plow. But they do pay us for it. So.
Eric, I want to thank you for coming in on the show. I know you've got a busy schedule. I appreciate it.
No, thank you, Rick.
Copper Country Today. We'll be right back.